It is really hard to complete any kind of creative project by yourself. When we started Ghost Coast Video, the first thing we did was we made a webinar and we cut it into pieces and we started distributing it. One of the hardest things to do is to actualize, to really be doing the thing you're talking about. That's really important in business when somebody might not be able to know you from Adam and you have 10 or 15 seconds to show them visually that your idea matches up with what they need. That can be very tough, but it's a little like making a hamburger. You've got to have the meat, the cheese, the bread, the sauce, the fixings. And if you're missing one of these things, you've got something, but it's not quite a hamburger. And creative people struggle with that all the time. They get locked into the aesthetics of what they're making. They try to make a perfect product or a great product. And you spend so much time making the bread that the meat gets stale, or vice versa. And that can be real stressful. At the end of the day, if you don't have the component parts of what you're creating, you are going to fall short as a creator. I mean, if you're making a video, there's scripting, shooting, editing, color grading, audio, publishing, promotion. And it's not so unusual to spend so much time on these initial steps that you don't get around to the publishing because you look back and, oh, this isn't what matches where I am now. Or you publish it and you're cooked. You're exhausted. There's no room for the business end of your creative work, which is getting it in people's hands. I know this is something that Rock Solomon at Mixed Deity has struggled with a lot. And as you hear his story, you'll see the story of somebody who's done everything: singing, acting, theater production, and has worked on projects both large and small with others, and worked to build a business and brand for himself more than once, and found it extremely exhausting. And he set up shop in a church across the street from Zoo Atlanta and just opened it up to people to see what would happen. And sometimes he phrases it as a social experiment, but I really think of it as a project in community organizing. And when you are doing things that are beneficial and you can get things across the finish line, one of the benefits of doing that is that word really spreads in ways that you can't always control. So when my own organization, Mosaic Atlanta, started looking for places to host events, we found such a great connection and a great shared ethic and a great shared work ethic. And when I think of the people who I met through Mixed Deity, just so many great projects, I think of things that are finished. I think of great events. I think of music videos, shows, interviews, songs, podcasts. In Atlanta, we think of art being everywhere, but it's not always finished. It's not always easy to do. It's not always as simple as it sounds. Mixed Deity is in a new location now. They're in the Little Five Points Community Center, which is the home of so many Atlanta institutions in arts and theater. The Horizon Theater is located there. The radio station WRFG is hosted there. And Rock kind of built an institution in town, interacting with so many artists, musicians, filmmakers. And now, going into 2024, looking to improve those processes in a new location. He works harder than almost anyone I know to make that process of bringing an idea to life very smooth, and one that works alongside a community, and one that doesn't have all that burnout and frustration that I see in so many creatives when I talk to them. I was able to talk to Rock, and we talked about aesthetics, style, building that style into a personal identity, taking the best of your knowledge and putting it together in a way that helps give people more power, more control over their destiny, so that that process of making that burger can go a little easier when you make contacts with other people who are specialists in maybe each of those layers. So if you know how to make the meat, maybe you run into somebody who knows how to make the bread and the cheese and the sauce and the fixins. And my big piece of advice to anybody that's listening to this is that if you want to make a burger or a movie or a podcast, just start doing it and put those component pieces together so that when you ask someone or when they ask you what you do, you tell them that you make hamburgers and you have something in your hand that you can show them. When we do our work as a marketing company and you walk in the door, I'm most proud of the things that I can show literally, whether that's landing pages, sales funnels, membership pages, social media, video production, lead generation. I'm not trying to sound like an ad here, but the things that we do as a business, I feel like they're successful because we did them. We did them repeatedly, and we built systems for you for doing all of that. And as you listen to Rock Solomon, he's somebody who's just more than almost anyone in town has an incredible knack for taking an idea and bringing it to life, even if it's somebody else's idea. So it was really fascinating to get into his process a little bit and learn about how he makes these things really fresh every time. And maybe even cooler than doing something great for yourself is having a system that is so fine-tuned that you can give it to somebody else and you can share it with someone else and see their creativity brought into the world. It's just awesome to talk to Rock, and I hope that when you listen to this conversation, you will enjoy it too. Rock, are you here? Do you collect film, music, picture, imagery? How do you curate the things that you like or find interesting?
I collect many things, Brandon.
I used to collect a lot of Batman shit. I don't really collect. I became a minimalist these days. Forced minimalist, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know all of that.
But as far as collecting, I do collect data and videos. And in fact, I'm going to send you another email real quick and sent. So while this conversation is going on, of course, I've been sending you emails. And this is an example of what I've been collecting, which is essentially all. Wait, what was the point of asking me if I collect stuff?
I really wanted to ask, it's really related to just your vibe as an artist. How did you come up with, I know that you really resisted music, but how did you develop your aesthetic? To what degree did you inherit it? Because
a lot of what I do is found. So I essentially, a lot of times I can't create something innately. I have to see something that looks wrong to me and start removing the parts that I don't like. I may have a sculptor's mindset because a sculptor removes until it reveals what they see. And I do that with video editing and design, and I just look at things and I feel like this is extra, we should get rid of that, we should get rid of that, and then that reveals what should be connected together better. And I just refine in that way, almost like a mosaic but backwards. All of my aesthetic is essentially just junk that I found something in that I saw that caught my eye, and then I needed to remove what it was attached to, maybe. And then over time, I began to notice that I do have a style, because I made the Drinking Club logo, the Mixed Deity Cafe logos. A lot of this stuff was made years apart and completely independently with no influence from each other whatsoever. And when I set them all next to each other, they all clearly look like part of a set. Similar colors, similar. So this is a style. This is an aesthetic that I have clearly chosen consciously or subconsciously. And although they're all unique and different, they clearly, you could tell maybe the same guy came up with all of that.
You've done music, acting, theater, photography. What else is on the list of event management? You've done just almost every art form that I can think of. You've dabbled in it at least.
You go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go ahead.
What was the point of asking me that?
I was going to say, after doing all of those things, you left them. What triggers the itch for you to drop one discipline and start picking up another one?
It turns out my desire to learn things has always trumped my other desires. I left those disciplines once they started to feel redundant. Once I was doing something that I had just done, once I was getting cast for generic characters that were just rehashes of characters I've already done, a few of those, and eventually I was just like, this is not, I'm not learning, there's nothing to learn from this character, there's nothing to learn from this story, this is just filler. Like, I'm committing 4 months of my life to rehearsals and performances for this show, and I'm just like, this, I could try to read in some sort of next level shit, but it's like, there's no challenge here. In fact, the last play I did, I literally phoned in the whole fucking thing and people thought I was great. I'm like, yeah, I didn't try anything. There was nothing to learn. This is a generic ass character that I was cast for because of my, I fit the demographic and I was a vetted actor. And I was like, I'm not learning anything. And I felt like I spent 4 months not learning anything, and that bothered me. And I had done, I didn't see what there was next to learn. I felt like anything I would learn beyond that would be pretty minor polishing points, if anything, and that honestly, things were going to get so routine that you hit an apex as an artist in a medium where if you don't ingest something new, something challenging, or something different that you don't have fully on lock, you start to get pat. You start to get complacent, just as a natural byproduct of the human condition. And I think that's why I've always left, once I've got, it was really bad from a professional standpoint, because it was always around the time I started getting paid fairly well. Oh, okay, this is like a, this is my job now. Right around that same time is also when it started getting really boring and really redundant, and I would leave, and I would be done. And I would move on to something else and start all over again with something that I was terrible at. And it's, I realized that I think what I, my real discipline or my real art form is just discovery, because I didn't want to do music. I shied away from music because I was like, yeah. And then I go and I play the songs over and over and over and over again, and show after show. And I, like, why would I want to do that? I've made the recording, just go listen to the recording. But the way a musician treats it, a true musician, is that each time you perform it, there's some nuanced moment that you discover in that moment. And I've only been discovering this recently as I'm exploring this question with myself about the discipline. What is the distinctive discipline, like psychological differences between being a filmmaker or the psychological differences of being a musician, right? Just we'll take those two, for example. And what I mean by that is, where is the psyche existing while the art form is happening? And how does that affect the personality type, or vice versa? And one of the things that really hit me hard recently was that filmmaking as an art form is by design living in the past. You're always talking about something that already happened. You always create, you create it when it's on screen and perform and playing, like you already did it. This is something you did in the past that people are now watching. But it's not a live art form. You're not doing it and being seen at the same time. So I realized that there's a certain personality type that deals with thinking about the past and living in the past and existing in the past and working in the past versus a musician who is in a perpetual state of being in the now. They literally cannot, in order to be in tempo with all the other musicians as they're playing, you can't be even 1 second ago. You can't be 5 minutes ago, you can't be an hour ago, you can't be last month or last year. You have to be in, truly in the now. And I think that is something that music does, that as a performer and even and as a listener, you never think about getting to the end of the song or the beginning of the song while the song is playing. It's the only art form where it only exists while it's happening. And it's weird because if you're creating that art form, the personality and the psychology of it living, it forces you to live in a different way. Like the documentary filmmaker side of my personality is always thinking about the past and like archiving footage and documenting stories and writing this down so that it'll be archived for future generations. It's all past and future. Whereas when I think about music or I'm doing music, it's like I have to be on the beat. And I'm not just splitting the beat from quarter second to quarter second, there's like a subtle nuance within that quarter second. And the feel and energy difference of like slightly before the beat happens or just slightly after the beat happens changes the groove of the music and the way, and that can only happen while it's happening. And the the difference in like psychology in your mind, of the parts of your brain and the presence and your value system, everything changes. It's, I don't know. I don't have an answer for you.
As you were talking, I was thinking of the movie Interstellar, which is a very on the nose metaphor for filmmaking. The guy goes off on a journey to an unknown land. He's sacrificing a set number of years of life and hoping that his family will see it and it will make up for his absence from them. Yeah, just long creative projects just tend to run that long way. The other thing is, once you've reached a certain amount of proficiency with any kind of art form, especially if you are the performer, you become a product. Your performance becomes a product. As you were talking about, all right, I've done enough theater that now I'm being typecast. It just means that your identity has crossed the threshold with enough people that your name has become a product, and that product now is open to being exploited.
Yeah. There's two schools of thought here. Being an artist for the sake of being an artist, I'm a creative, I want to discover things and tell my story and find myself. That's one thing. The other arc of that is business, which allows everything to actually exist. It allows this video camera system to work. It allows the power to be on. It allows this food and drink to come to my table. Everything that we do requires business, which taps into commodities. Now, the weird place where art and business intersect, where something that is a piece of your heart and soul, your story or your emotion, and the idea of having that commodified and put out there to the world, it's a very weird thing it's literally the same mechanism as just being whored out. But that's the nature of business. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. In fact, that is the vessel of which to get out to the world. But there is a very, really important point of detachment where you have to, and I think this is really important, while you're creating the thing, you need to completely reject the business world and just be about the creation of the thing. But at some point, like a bird giving birth and hatching and growing and getting wings and flying the coop, you have to let that creativity go out into the world, and then it is a commodity to the world, because the world can't take it in any other way. They are the recipients, you are the giver. So once you've created what you've created, you gotta cut the umbilical cord and serve it up and let it go. The key is, don't let the commoditized world infect or affect your creative process. I think it's super important to create a barrier between those two. Let the creativity be its own complete, unaltered space. Let it be pure, let it be authentic. Once it's done, set it somewhere, let it become a commodity, and then just let it go. Let the world take it, run with it. The ball is in their court now. Be done. Your process was to create it and let go of it. It's not yours anymore once the creation is done, because your job is the process of creation. Holding on to it as a commodity and managing it as a commodity, it'll just fuck you up. Just let it go. Let it be in the world. Let them process it and digest it however they're going to, and recognize that you probably will never understand the thing that affected you and how it'll affect other people. And you're not supposed to. That's fine. Just finish the creation before the business starts to ruin it. And when you let it go, put your hands up in the air and forgive whatever's about to happen next.
I think we've talked about this in the past. When you make something, whether it's a lot of people know music, but it can also be a small film or it can be a performance or whatever, the mechanism for even getting it out in the world requires like some kind of money or business investment, and you're either entering into this exploitative relationship with some sort of company, or you're making your own company in order to support the creative work, or you're doing it alongside, you're getting the money from other people to support it. When I did this show, the first time I did it, it was off of donations, and it wasn't anywhere near enough and never was. And I was able to really come back to it after I was able to fund it externally. I wonder how much of that you've seen or how you've dealt with that in the past.
Yeah, so there's basically three metrics. There's the metric of money, the metric of time, and the metric of control. With these three metrics, regardless of what it is, there is the whatever. This day and age, the amount of money that you need to raise to do something, it just really isn't what it used to be. Because everything's digital. You don't have to print things or ship things or store things. You just don't have to deal with any of that stuff, right? The physical demands and overhead to create a movie or a song or whatever, it's just not even remotely what it used to be for the creation of it. Same thing is for the distribution, so getting it out there. But the metrics to consider is that, first and foremost, no one's going to be interested in funding your project if you haven't already done all of the hard work to make it a financially viable product that they can exploit. Business is by design supposed to exploit things. It exploits opportunities. It's naturally opportunistic. And there can be certain advantages to letting yourself be exploited in certain ways and recognizing that once you cross a certain threshold, you've been commodified, right? That's the way that world works. But here's the thing. The other metric, which I think is the most valuable metric and maybe most often overlooked metric, is time. Right. So if you're saying, I want to have more control and I want to have more this and I want to have more that, and that's fine. But you only have so much time. And so, yes, you could launch your own business. You can launch your own mechanisms. You can launch your own. You can do all of this yourself. You can build it up from the ground completely. Right. But know that it will take a shit ton of time. And for all the time you spend on this project is time that you cannot spend on anything else. Any other projects or other parts of your life and whatnot. If a business came to me and said, hey, we really like your blah, blah, blah thing. We want to take it and run with it and do all that shit with it. And I would have to say, okay, what is the ratio of what do I give up? Okay, I lose this much control and I lose this much ownership and I lose this much whatever. I'll get whatever I'm going to get for it. And I get to continue doing anything. But the most important metric, and any wealthy person knows this, the most and only important metric is how much time is this going to take? Because unlike everything else on the planet, it's a resource that cannot be replaced. Cannot. There's no way to do it. And everybody's on the same ticking clock. So wealthy people always go for the thing that will maximize their revenue while minimizing their use of time. And so if you think in those terms, maybe you have five or six things you'd like to do, allowing yourself to straight up be exploited for one, as long as they cut you a check so that you don't have to spend your time generating money from somewhere else, right? Then what do you do with this? You're essentially buying your own time back so that you can focus on the other things that you want to focus on. It just depends on what's more important to you. But if you really sit with it and think about it for a minute, it's always going to be time. It's always going to be time that is the most valuable thing. You just might not.
When people start businesses or projects, they're usually trying to solve their own problem. Tell me, X-Deity, why did you start it? What problems did you have? What does it solve? I think of this as it's a project of projects. Or you've used the word community of communities, but also yeah. It's a project of projects.
Yeah, system of systems, network of networks. God of God, Lord of Lords. I just had a flashback to my Christian school days. Yes, that's pretty consistent. People have problems in their lives and they want to try to solve them, and then that sends them off on a whole campaign. And I've had to ask myself a few times, in the darker moments of the mixed deity story,
what's wrong with me?
No, just, I was like, I just need to double check with myself. Is this really a good idea, or is this just a trauma response? Is this whole fucking idea just some sort of trauma response because I didn't get XYZ as a kid? Wah-hah, boo-hoo. Is that what this is? Or is this actually a good idea on its own merit? Remove me from it. Remove my personal attachment from it. By itself, does it stand alone? And that was a question I had to ask, and I did ask that a number of times, and I came back to the answer that, yeah, it really does stand alone in ways that I had never really predicted or anticipated. I originally came up with the idea in 2009, which is like a million years ago now. That's how long it takes to bring shit to life. And basically, I was trying to promote my album. I was driving cross country, selling CDs out of the trunk of my car, and I had just finished 7 years of working on this fucking album to create my sonic masterpiece, right? And then I realized that after a few months of this, I realized I'm like, okay, this is a dead end. I just spent 7 years doing this album. I think it's fantastic. I felt so satisfied creatively. I'm like, you could run me over with a bus right now. And I felt like I had contributed my voice to the history of the world, even though nobody's heard it. And then I realized that I now had this task of promoting this album. And when I started looking at the promotion of the album and exploring that and like actually tying that to album sales, and I did this for about 6 months where I lived off of album sales. I would literally just go to a town. I'd have a bunch of printed CDs. I would grab a set of headphones and a player. I'd go stand on a touristy street corner. I'd just flag strangers down all day long, flag them down and say, hey, yo, I got this song. If anyone would hear it, and I'd play it for them. As long as I got $2 or more for a CD, then I doubled my money. So if I could get 10 or 20 bucks for a CD, then I 10x'd or 20x'd that investment for the CD. And I literally could have just kept doing that and made a living doing that. And it didn't usually take more than about 2 or 3 hours a day. I would make $100 or more in CDs. But it was like, I didn't do this so I could be a guy standing on a corner selling CDs. Now that's what all my, again, time is being spent doing. I'm not an artist anymore. I'm a guy who sells shit on the corner now. And I'm like, this is a huge problem. I didn't plan on this. I didn't plan on all of this work to create this art so that I could just go stand on the corner and beg people to want to listen to it. I think I'm in my own personal hell right now. And I started thinking, what would it take to really get this out there so I don't have to do this on the corner shit? And I started thinking about it and I realized, oh shit, it would take like a whole team of people, it would take a whole industry, a whole business. Like, this would take a lot of work to get this out to the world and promoted and exposed. It would be a full on, it wouldn't even be one person's job, it would be a whole team of people's job just to promote this one thing. And I realized, I'm never gonna do that. I'm not going to dedicate the next 7 years of my life to promoting the thing that I spent the last 7 years of my life creating. This is a dead end. I don't want to do that. I want to create the next thing. I want to be what I am, which is an artist, and go be an artist. Somebody out there is a marketer. Let them be a marketer. Here, take the thing that I made and go market it. I'm sure there's lots of people who are great at marketing and great at business and all that shit who don't have any ideas on what to market or what business to start. And I could just give them my idea and they could just go with it and do their thing. And this very simple concept that for every piece of the pie that I don't want to be responsible for, somebody else would love to be responsible for that piece of the pie. And if I could find all of the pieces of the pie, then there could be a whole pie for everybody who is putting a piece in. And that was essentially the beginning of the concept for Mixed Deity. And I thought to myself, shit, we just need to combine creators in a way where they can collaborate instead of compete, because all of the other musicians were people I was competing against, and all the other, and they all had the same problem as me. They have the same problem as me, and we're competing against each other. We already can't handle 90% of this workload by ourselves, and we have to compete against the guy next to us. This is a dead end. This is a non-starting proposition. Plus, the guy next to me, we could collaborate. I could do something for him that's easy. I know website stuff. I could help him with that. And oh, he knows whatever distribution or something, and he could help me with that. And like, shit, if we could get 8 more people like that, if we had 10 people who all had 2 skills and they were strategically put together and they just did the thing for the whole team. And I'm like, oh, well, this is a co-op is what that would be. But it'd be like a co-op of co-ops, like a system that you could populate where the work would be held inside the bubble, and therefore the profits and the proceeds and the benefits could be inside the bubble, and you wouldn't have to just sell up vertical, beg for the higher ups to like give you a little bit of attention and please exploit me, please suck me dry of every scrap of human dignity I ever had and profit off of my hard work. Oh, thank you. overlords of music industry, which has been predatorial since it was basically incepted. And so that was the beginning of it. And then I worked on that. I tried to tell people about that idea for a long time. And they always thought I was like, hey, that's great. That's really cute. Yeah, oh, yeah. And then I couldn't, the mixed deity was synonyms, the shortest synonyms for combine and creator. So mixed deity became the title for my idea. And I made a video in 2009, which has over 300 views now on YouTube. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and, record break, a manifesto.
I know. And the fun part, so fast forward, I just started using the name for the events. I just used it whenever I didn't want to use my name. And eventually I ended up in Atlanta with the church and I was doing the venue thing. And then we had the pandemic and that just wiped everything out. Now for the last decade, I've been telling people, wouldn't it be cool if we could get artists to collaborate together and work together? And then all of a sudden, I was in this weird position where I'm like, oh, now I have a 15,000 square foot church venue that's just mystical on its own merit. And the whole goddamn world shut down for the next 2 years and no one has anywhere to go or anything to do. And I suddenly found that when I invited people over to the church and I told them about my kooky idea about collaborating, that for the first time, because their whole world had just been shut down, they had nowhere else to go. And this church was just mystical as fuck. That I would tell them my kooky idea, and they were just like, that sounds cool. Oh, I like that. Yeah. And they would take it in, and they were game to go down on the ride with me. And so for the first time ever, I got to start experimenting with this concept. Like, okay, so this is the concept. Now, how would we actually do anything with it? What is the, how do we... So I held on to that place for as long as I could. And the whole time I was there, again, my real discipline is learning, right? So my goal was to learn how my idea could work. I understood what I wanted to do. I understood there was a demand. But now how? Like literally, how does this actually become a thing? And as I was discovering that, what I discovered was, I've discovered a lot. It's been a very educational couple years for me. But one of the most inspiring things I learned is that I realized that the problem I had was nowhere remotely unique to me. It wasn't even remotely unique to the music industry. I began to realize that the problem I was dealing with, kind of everybody has the same problem. Kind of everybody, for kind of everything, is that what would normally be solved through automatic community instinct as a human beings just never seems to fucking work. And the reason why is because we're being pushed out of our natural communal state by an overly industrialized world where there's nowhere you can go, where you're not being bled dry for every fucking penny they can get out of you. And you know it on a conscious or subconscious level. And so you either quit going places or wherever you go, you put your defenses up. And then we have a whole society of everybody with their defenses up who now don't operate under their communal instincts. They don't help each other. They don't collaborate. They don't trust each other. And they're all broken apart and disparate. What I didn't realize at that time, that I shouldn't have had to do more than just create my art and present my art. And if it had its own value and merit, the natural community instinct would be to share it. Oh, this is cool. Let me share it with my friend. This is cool. Let me share it with my friend. And that's how it would organically grow. But because of the industrialized world, making everything about the commodity, making everything about the dollar, if it doesn't make me money, I'm not going to participate, right? And I realized that we've been mechanized out of our natural communal instincts. And so what mixed deity became was a mechanism to recreate a space for our natural communal instincts to exist again in a tandem with industry.
How did you improve the process of the meetings? How did the meetings evolve over time? Or did you already have it? What was that like?
Originally, the meetings, at the beginning of the CD Studios in Grant Park, we basically said, hey, sign up for a $15 subscription and you can just come in here and do whatever you want. Just use the space, be creative, have fun. And then we began to realize that it was a little chaotic. So they said, okay, why don't we have a weekly meeting where people can come and say what they want to use the space for, and then people can talk to each other and help each other out. So we started the Tuesday meetings. And it was very simple. It was just like, hey, we're all here because we want to use a space for something. Say who you are, what you want to do, and then just let the rest happen organically. And over time, it began to reveal itself as somewhat of a parallel of AA meetings. I realized that this is basically how an AA meeting works. It's a circle. We all do that. But then it evolved, and we got the idea board to where people who had been previous meetings could submit ideas, and then they could live in perpetuity, and that kind of helped connect people over a span of time. And then that prompted, basically, each time we would cycle through the meetings, the organic communal element was there, but then it stopped, and it didn't go much farther. And I realized in order to start something with a communal element, and then to actually graduate it into something actionable, that's where you had to cross over into the business world. And it's been really educational to realize how interconnected the community mindset and the business mindset are, and how important it is to make sure that they're pulled into balance. And I think a lot of people vilify capitalism, and I definitely did for a while myself. And then one day I realized that everything that I have that functions in my life is a byproduct of capitalism. And it's kind of a bitter pill to swallow. And what the truth is that it's not capitalism, it's runaway capitalism. It's unbalanced capitalism. It's capitalism that doesn't have the community element to keep it in check. That has been gutted, at least in the States. And so I think the win for humanity is to create the balance between those two human instincts, because capitalism really is pretty inhumane in its fundamental. It is the kill or be killed. It is the warrior self-protecting mindset of the human being, whereas the community side of things is obviously the communal instinct of the human being. And we have to have both. We can't live in just one or the other. Capitalism would actually die if it successfully killed off all sense of community. It would eat itself and perish. And community would similarly die if it killed off all capitalism, because we wouldn't have the food wouldn't be coming in, and power wouldn't be on. Nothing would fucking work anymore. We would all just hug each other and then die in the cold, starving. So the two have to get along. And unfortunately, capitalism in the States has become somewhat of a bully, and you can really see it when you go to other parts of the world and realize that they have done a much better job of keeping those two sides of human nature in balance. And the meetings had to reflect that. So they evolved and became the incubator game. They became the co-creator incubator. They became the creative drinking club. They became the Mixed ED Media Cafe. And now all of that's being rewrapped in the Creatives Concierge campaign. And so it's almost like a fractal of intention that has woven itself up from a very small seed into a pretty organically grown, interconnected series of pathways for people of all different types. So you could be coming from any different type of mindset, going to any different type of mindset, and there's going to be a pathway already laid out that's going to help work. And it's set up in a way that interconnects with other people's pathways that hopefully allows people to collaborate, connect, and support each other without being bogged down or sucked into these relationship problems that happen when two people don't see eye to eye too much. There's a little bit of a freedom to take it when it's working and let it go when it's not, and still maintain your forward momentum.
And in that time, you've had a lot of successful events and successful projects, both like one-off things and things that have taken time. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that you've liked that have come out of the Mixed Deity system/world? What are the things you look back on positively?
Honestly, I have a really terrible memory, so a lot of it fades. I will discover them when I'm sorting through things on the computer. I just was updating the website recently, and I went back into the past event section. And I was scrolling through there. Holy shit, I remember that. Oh, shit. And I was like, wow, we did a lot. Like, we did a lot of events. Like, during the pandemic, we were popping off all the time shit was going on there. And you can look at it if you go to the mixdeity.com, go to the website and you click on past events.
Yeah.
I had to open up a page for it just the other day, just for past events. Because I'm realizing, like, people don't know. They don't know. I don't know. I was there. I forgot most of them. Whenever I think my memory works best when I'm provoked into learning something new. If I'm not learning something new, I won't, my brain won't track it as a meaningful, like a milestone anchor point for yeah. memory. So you say successful events. To me, a successful event is anything where I learned something new. So that doesn't necessarily mean the event itself was successful. It could have been a massive train wreck. But if I learned something new from it, then that was a success to me. And I would remember it, theoretically.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's I didn't even scroll through all of it on the website. When I posted the page, there was like five pages of pages. And I scrolled through a few. God damn, this and this and this. I'm like, okay, cool. I got to do other things. But yeah, there's a shit ton of stuff that we did there.
How do you pitch where Mixed Deity is now to somebody looking to get involved? What is the state of it now? What are the things that you need, are planning? Pitch it to somebody who's just discovering it now and wants to get involved.
That's interesting because the pitch really depends on where they're at. So before I would pitch anybody on any of it, I would try to get to know them first or understand what they're trying to do, because there's probably 50 different elevator pitches for Mixed Deity, just depending on your entry point. The point of Mixed Deity is that it is in fact a single thing, but it's the kind of thing like a crystal. If you rotate it, the light bends through it. And depending on where you're entering from and depending on where you're trying to go, your pathway is going to be completely unique to you. And so it's a developing system that is based on observations of human interaction in the creative space with a focus on collaboration that taps into base level instinctive human behavior to promote collaboration and creation. And ultimately build out, potential economies. It's weird because nothing's really off the board.
Let me phrase it this way, because your website literally is like a portal, and it's, I want this, I want that, I want the other thing. And it's like a different experience depending on what you click on as a thing that you want. How would you explain the Creative Drinking Club? The Creative Drinking Club as a thing, and then let's describe the incubator as a thing, and then we'll describe the concierge as a thing.
Sure. So
what's the Drinking Club?
All right. So an underpinning of pretty much everything that we're doing at Mixed Deity is trying to balance the capitalism side of human experience versus the communal side of human experience. Right now, it's super out of balance. If I want to get a drink, I go to a bar, I spend 10 times more money for the amount of liquid that I'm getting, because the social experiment of going to a bar pulls me there. And even though everyone knows that there's 1,000% markup on every drink, plus you got to tip 20% just because somebody went like this, the communal instinct demands that you do it anyway, at least for certain things. And yet sharing a drink is such a base instinct in all of history, all of human interaction. Treaties and wars and marriages and celebrations of every kind. There's always a toast or a libation. In the Bible, my cup runneth over. Like all of this stuff around sharing a beverage. Water is the beginning of all life on the goddamn planet. It is so fundamentally connected to our state of humanity that the idea that if I want to get a drink, I've got to go, that they've commodified the shit out of it. I'm going to go spend 1,000% more. And the problem with that is that it's money driven. And because it's money driven, the experience is going to reflect that. So I go to a bar. They have proven that if the music is cranked up past comfort levels, it drives people to go drink more because it numbs their senses on a subconscious level. They know that, right? If the music is too loud at a bar, people will buy more drinks. So guess what happens at bars? The music is too fucking loud, like most of the time.
You can't even hear a conversation. You're talking to somebody next to you and you're like, oh no, yeah, I can't hear you. Yeah.
This is not an accident. This is engineered. Just like the music at the grocery store is this constant slowing, pacing, mindless vibiness that puts you in a subconscious coma because they want to slow you down at the grocery store so that you will be there longer, because the longer you're there, the more random shit you're going to put in your cart, right? So like capitalism exploits the arts in ways to manipulate the human consciousness to spend more money. And these are all facts. This is all science, right? So the Creative Drinking Club is intended to just remove all that shit. We're not selling drinks. We don't even provide the drinks. It works like a house party bar, just like you would go to your friends. They invited you to a party. You're going to bring a bottle of wine or a thing or some libations to share. And the drinking club is, we just took that and we just put a little box around it. We said, okay, cool. Make this part of the membership. And then what we can do is that we can bridge the gap between commercial spaces and community instincts. You can't do a BYOB to a bar. You couldn't bring your own six pack into a bar and watch your show. And you're not like, those bands aren't going to get paid, or the DJ or whoever, whatever entertainment they might or might not have, if they're not generating the money from the alcohol sales. So what we do is we forego the alcohol sales and we just say, you bring your own alcohol and we'll create a space to where you can go to a commercial show that's funded through memberships and supports and tickets and other things. It's not funded by alcohol. And because it's not funded by alcohol sales, we don't need to manipulate the entire environment to drive more sales to alcohol. In other words, we can put a band or a performance on stage that is based off of its own merit, its ability to sell tickets or generate its own support without having to drive alcohol sales. And the reason you don't want to drive alcohol sales is because then I'm going to hire the bands that drive the most alcohol sales instead of the bands that actually make the best music, right? It's a literal problem. If you had, say, a listening room, and the listening room, everybody's just amazing music, music that is so good that everybody just is glued to the stage and they don't move, right? That's bad for business if you're selling drinks. It's bad for business. So they're not going to hire that band again. Yeah, you were amazing. Everybody loved you. You're the best band we've ever had here, but we had the lowest drink sales tonight. So we're hiring you again. Fuck off. We're going to hire this like schmuck band from down the street that's obnoxious and loud and everybody hates, but they're here anyway. So fuck it. They might as well get a drink. So it's bad for the arts. It's bad for the arts, period. So what we've done is we pulled that away. We said, listen, drinks, do your drinks, bring what you want to drink, have what you want to drink. There's a lot of advantages to that because we don't have to staff every single drink. The other part of the Creative Drinking Club is that I go to the bar and they're like, what would you like to drink? And I'm like, you don't have it. I want wheatgrass. I would like a smoothie. I would like some blueberry juice or some weird hippie shit. You have carrot juice. You have a fucking warm milk. What have you got? Okay, fine. I'll have a Coors Light then. Thank you. Yes, Coors Light. Because that's the business, right? I remember when I tried to stop drinking alcohol, I was like, you know what? I'll have a virgin screwdriver, please. Which, of course, is just orange juice. And, oh my God, have you ever had tap orange juice from a bar without vodka? It's the most disgusting thing ever. And I actually ended up having to ask them to put vodka in it to cut it because the orange juice was half fermented anyway. It was so fucking terrible. What? I can't even get tea at a bar. I say, hey, can I get a Arnold Palmer? It's lemonade and tea. I'm like, yeah, we don't have that. I'm like, you don't have lemonade and tea? Are you fucking kidding me right now? I hate this. I hate bar culture. Fine, I'll have a Coors Light. So it's an answer to all of that. It's just a place to share drinks. None of them are for sale. They're all free. You bring whatever you want. It's community-based. And then because we add it into the membership, it makes it private. Right. We can host public events and still maintain a private drinking club, which makes it just free to have a nice experience and not get sucked into the bullshit of this. And we have no financial motivation to hire the band that'll drive drink sales instead of the band that everybody actually loves.
It's like a Six Flags season pass, except for drinking.
Something like that. That's a long explanation, but honestly, I really love
the drinking club. No, I appreciate the anthropology of that answer. What? Tell me about the incubator.
Okay, yeah. Co-creator incubator is, I think, maybe my most proud, my proudest achievement of all time. In fact, I think I have a visual aid for this one.
Okay, cool.
See if I can find it. The incubator, I went to an incubator like 4 or 5 years ago, and that's when I learned what an incubator was. And we had been dealing with it for, oh, here's one visual. I got two visual aids. Yes, two visual aids. Look how fast that was. Easy peasy. The co-creator incubator came out as another thing born from the Creators Club Tuesday meetings that we used to have at the old church. And it essentially it was a strategy for getting people to collaborate. And I watched, I didn't tell a lot of people this, but people asked me, why would you, you know, stay there when the landlord like hated you and wanted you out and you had to fight him in court for 2 years? Like, why did you fight your landlord all the way to the Georgia State Supreme Court when your lease was already expired? First of all, because he was a dick. And
just
to,
in general, they're bad. This guy was some next level, like some like pure as if predatory behavior was just the only way to be. And he was offended that I didn't recognize that, like, predators are, that's how life works. It was baffling. Like, he's is a whole other story. But I knew that the space allowed people to have an imagination that I could never get them to have before. And so I was like, I've got some of this figured out, but I haven't really cracked the code yet. There's a DNA to this. There's a DNA to this. I don't know what it is, but I know that it exists. I'm going to figure it out, but I need to stay here long enough to figure that out. And I need to continue this sort of low-key social experiment that we're doing. And the social experiment was the church was just this beautiful, amazing space. And people wanted to do things that they wanted to be part of it. And I would just say, okay, cool, come be part of it. You just have to collaborate with somebody. And then I would watch what would go down. And it was fascinating to see how many different ways events and projects can just fail objectively. But over time, I began to realize that they all had the same DNA. And that there was a connecting DNA to all of it, and there was connecting human motivations to why people would behave the way they do, which is really weird because human beings are just an infinite question of like how they're, it's an infinite number of minds out there, and every mind is unique and wrapped differently, and you could try to understand a single person the rest of your life and still never figure them out entirely. However, there is a subset of that that is a baseline human instinct that is universal to pretty much everyone. The way we, many of our base instinctual behaviors are very predictable, and capitalism has exploited this knowledge for a long time. And so watching how people came together, watching how they, why some things would succeed, why things would fail, mainly watching how people were motivated, what motivated them to continue with something, what motivated them to quit, all the different pieces of the puzzle, and it began to come to me that the way to get people to collaborate would be through gameplay. I realized what they need, what they're missing is a map. They don't know where the fuck they're going most of the time. They haven't been there before. How do you know where you're going if you're trying to do something you've never done, right? You need a map, or you have to learn everything the hard way. So the goal is that we don't have to learn everything the hard way. There's mentors out there. Every problem you've got, somebody else has already had that problem, and they probably wrote a book about it. So a way to solve problems without having to do it the hard way, a roadmap to go to a place you've never been before, and a way to incentivize people to help you do that. Like, how do you solve those equations? And what it became was a connected community that included both people at the top of their game and people who are just entering the game, right? Normally they're siloed. The people at the top hang out with the people at the top. People at the bottom hang out with the people at the bottom. That's terrible. That's terrible. They need to intermingle, right? That's how mentorship works. That's how community works. You learn from your elders, the people who've been there before you. You should have access to them. And they naturally have an instinct to share what they've learned because they went through the process and they're a master craftsman and they want to pass that knowledge down. That's very baseline human instincts to do that. So we create that connecting space where everyone's included. And we encourage you, you're top of your game, cool, come on down. And we're not going to put you on a pedestal because you're the top of the game and you're at the bottom of the game, and we're not going to shame you for that. here at the Creative Drinking Club, the Co-Creator Incubator, everyone is equal because our time is equal. Every hour of every day is an hour for everyone equally, right? You want to start messing with money, yeah, now equality, inequality goes out off the charts. But time is the great equalizer. It doesn't matter if you're a billionaire, if we're all on the same plane and it's going down in 60 minutes from now, we all have 60 minutes, end of story. There's no amount of wealth or knowledge that will save you, right? Period. So time became the great equalizer to bring people who were at the top of their game and people who were just beginning onto the same level playing field. And so that was the first thing. The second thing was to create a roadmap for a place that you've never been. So that meant a game, right? And a game essentially had, you've never been to your specific place, but in order to get there, you're going to have to solve all the same problems. You're just going to have different answers for them. But we know what the problems are going to be, though, most of them. So let's create a list of problems for you to solve, and your answers will send you in the direction that you need to go in, but you're still going to, we don't have the answers. You're the one who has to come up with the answers, but we do know what many of the hurdles you're going to be, and we can categorize them. So that's how the game roadmap slash game started to play. And then the gamification of it, which is essentially in creating incentive for other people to participate, that was essentially the last piece of the puzzle. And what we realized was that because we all have the same problems, whether we consciously realize it or not, we needed a way to say, hey, I'll help you solve your problem if you can help me solve my problem. But we have to make sure that we are helping people who help people, right? At first, we were just giving away help indiscriminately, which seems like a nice idea until you realize that people take it, they're happy to take it, and then they leave. Like, not everybody, but a lot of them do. Too many of them for it to be sustainable, right? So then it's like, okay, so we have to have a metric for, in order for you to qualify for help, you have to satisfy something. I'm like, what is it that you should satisfy? Should you have money? Should you have skills? Should you buy something, donate something? It's help someone else. So I was like, oh, okay. So the recipe is we create a positive feedback loop and we say, you qualify for help when you help someone else. And what's the thing that everybody needs help with? The one thing that can't be manipulated or changed, that doesn't have a different value no matter where you are in the spectrum, no matter how rich or wealthy or poor or smart or dumb you are, something that is the universal constant that can be measured as a standard for everyone, and it is time. So we say, oh, okay. So time is the metric. If you donate your time to help solve the problems of the peers in your environment, then we'll graduate you to a co-creator status. And once you're a co-creator, you can maintain your active status by maintaining that certain base level of help of time, contributing time to other people's benefit. And then that will get you on the pathway to be able to activate your game, to be able to activate other people giving your time to you. Now, this already happens in the industrialized world, except for they added the money equation. And once they added the money equation, they convert your time to dollars. And once it's converted to dollars, they can manipulate the value of the dollar in a way where they scoop off 90% of the value and leave you with what's left. So in a day, if you convert your time to money, for example, if you sell your time by the hour, you get paid for whatever company you work for, you generate, I don't know, $1,000 worth of value that day.
Yeah. Anybody that's ever made a hamburger knows where you're going here.
Yeah. But they're only going to pay you like $200 and they're going to keep the other $800 worth of value, right? And then they can stack that times 1,000 or 100,000. And then business has this proposition where it can infinitely scale because it's converting your time into money, of which most of it it keeps. Once it's converted into money, they can change the value of the money. They can change the cost of just completely abstract, random thing they made up. They can, the value of the money in this location on Earth buys you this much shit. But if you go to this location on Earth, it buys you this much shit because we transferred the money to a different currency. And now it's worth 70 times more than it was at this location. It's just bullshit. Just fucking bullshit. In order to keep the game from being corrupted, we had to take commerce out of it. So it is simply a status-based game where you either have the status that you would have in a community that people would say, yep, they have status, I'm gonna help them because I know who they are and I want them to succeed. Or you don't. And you don't buy or sell or trade or commerce or nothing. There was no way to turn it into a market exchange where it would not ultimately have the same problems of a market exchange once you convert time into currency. So that was an archetype rule number one in order for this to work. It had to be status-based and not currency-based. And then it was about the roadmap, which is where I get my visual aids. It took about 6 months, but we turned it into, took all the proposition equations, all of the issues, all of the psychological flows and challenges, because I have lots of focus issues. I had to bake that into it. So we ended up creating this guy here, and this is the only copy of the prototype that exists that's still with us. All the rest of them got destroyed by the situation with the landlord. So this is one, and essentially it is a game piece, right? This is a, see, it goes here. There's a vision board here. So where you put your vision board. This is your discovery questions in order to make sure you're like going in the right pathway. This is a scan code that takes you to the digital sister of this, which is where you keep all of your data. This is just a status and strategy tool. It does not save data. You scan here, and that's where you save your data. This just is, allows you to visually look at where you're at from day to day, right? And then you open it again, and it's got phase one, phase two, phase three, discovery, development, delivery. All of the discovery questions get ported over here to your development. This is where you find all of the answers. Who's going to do it? How's it going to happen? When's it going to happen? Where's it going to happen? Who's gonna, blah, blah, blah. You map it out. This is essentially like where you make your quote business plan, but you don't really need all the bullshit of a business plan because you don't need this to necessarily make money. You just have to figure out what the economic model is of it. You're focusing on your creative path first. So the economy of it like takes a back seat. It's still there, but it takes a back seat. And this is your development of that, right? Once you finish your development, we activate it here. And this is where you basically got the two tiers of delivery, bringing it to fruition, and then and marketing it. Because it has, no matter what you're doing, people are going to need to know that it exists. Half of it's marketing and half of it's delivery. And that's this phase right here. Now, inside of this, there are some additional tools. If you fold this down, oh, I love this thing so much. I'm very proud of this, honestly. If you fold this down, you have a full year calendar right here. So you can track your progress. And this is the calendar I designed. It's a timeline calendar. So it goes horizontally and the weeks go vertically. So it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, blah, blah, blah. Oh, sorry, it's going down. I'm mirroring myself in this video. So, and then you can draw a line from, oh, I started here and then it took me 9 weeks and I ended here. And then as each day goes by, you can see visually where you are in the spectrum. Up here we have a to-do doing done. This is just a great basic Scrum board. If you're familiar with Scrum, then you know what this is. The piece is designed to hang on the wall. So you can actually tap this to the wall and you've got your Scrum board right there, plus your calendar at the bottom. Put all your sticky notes on here for your project progress. When it's time to go to a meeting or go to a wherever, you just fold it up, boom, and you take it with you. On the back, we added in some tools. A little toolbox, so you can scan here. This will look like, if you don't know, if you forgot how to play or you don't know how it works, like all the tools to learn how to work it are there. If you're suffering from lack of inspiration, you're like, I don't know, I can't do it. Scan here and check out some stories, and some people will talk to you and you learn about what it takes to bring it to life, and that anybody can do it. So get inspired. And then here is a wellness checkup. And the reality is that you are your project. No matter what your project is doing, it's going to be a byproduct of whatever you're doing with your own mind, body, spirit, self. If there's shit going on in your life that you're trying not to think about or pay attention to, it's going to be reflected in your performance with your project. It's all going to end up in there. You are your project. So we have a wellness checked up, baked in there to give you a chance to, if things just aren't working, have a little introspective look. And then there's some tools on the website that help you maybe find a path to addressing some of those issues. Or if it just tells you, hey, your shit's a little too fucked up right now, it's cool. You can put a pause on this and get your shit straight, and then you can come back to it and pick it up wherever you left off. And so that's the visual aid. And then the other one is this guy, because we realized that this is way too complicated to start people off with. We needed a way to start people off that was much simpler, and that is this guy. And before you can really do anything anyway, you have to essentially, we're not going to really fuck with you until you've demonstrated that you genuinely are down for helping other people. And this is essentially, it's as simple as a coffee card where you get your 10 coffees and then your 11th one is free or some shit like that. It's the same premise, except these are volunteer points. And once you get enough volunteer points, you become a co-creator. And now we're like, oh, okay, you actually showed up and you actually helped people. Now you've graduated to a status where we're going to open up our resources for you, because we need to make sure we're opening you up to people who help people. And if we help people, then the helping of the people will help the people who help the people. And all of that help becomes a positive feedback loop, which is what the goal is, to create a positive feedback loop. But we don't really have to do much. Unlike the capitalist world, we don't really have to do much coercion or manipulation or any of that shit, because all we're doing is reinforcing natural human instincts to want to collaborate anyway. It's just we're also protecting people who are free to donate their time and energy from being parasitically attacked. We're creating a barrier of entry to dissuade predators, users, exploiters, people who talk their face off and promise you the world and deliver nothing and then take everything you've got. It's just, we just cannot create an ecosystem that can support people like that. So by killing the monetary aspect of it and by making it a time-based thing, a hustler is not going to chase you down if they know they're only going to get 4 hours from you. By giving you 4 hours, that balances out. That's not a hustle. That's just an exchange. That's just basic human decency. It's not going to work. Hey, Abdul. And so based off of human nature, we had to recreate a safe space for human nature on a community level to exist, and a little roadmap and a little incentive for people to want to participate in other people's projects. And I'm just absolutely fucking enamored by this thing. I think it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. And despite all the shit I have eaten for sticking with it, I still stick with it, and I'm excited to bring this to the world, which is still very much in its infancy. And that's the Co-Creator Incubator in a nutshell.
Tuesdays, that's a live thing that people can participate in. They can watch. They can just be a part of the magic.
We are beta testing for January, our Tuesdays, as a live interactive event. I'm hesitant to promote it as something that is vetted.
Right.
We invite people to be part of its development. But yes, we realize that we needed to embrace the virtual world on this one, because it's just extremely efficient, quite frankly. And efficiency is a big part of what makes the incubator work. That said, we're approaching it from a slightly unique perspective, where we want to make sure that there is still, we don't lose. I think a big problem with technology is that when you take on new technology, you're like, oh, this is faster and smarter and better. But you're also losing something. You're also losing something. And if you don't pay attention to what you're losing when you take in a new technology, you may lose something collectively that impacts you in ways you hadn't really thought of, and usually in a negative way. So we're trying to make sure that what we lose is not something that we really are going to miss, in-person connectivity. So we're approaching it from the idea that we want to bridge a seamless gap between joining the event virtually or joining the event in person. And it's a seamless space between the two. And you can have as much of that in-person experience as possible if you're joining virtually, but also have as much of the efficiency possible if you're joining in person.
What if I don't want to help people, but I do have money and can help them that way?
Question. Yeah. So again, Mixed Deity is about creating an entry point for all types of people, and that is your own pathway. It's the same system. It's just a different entry point, different exit point. Money makes the world go round. You want to just pay for something and get it done? Cool. That's great. All of the people who are donating and volunteering their time to collaborate in the Co-Creator Incubator, they also have bills. They also have things they need to take care of and do. And they also have usually services that they can offer, and you can pay them for their time and pay them for their services or pay them for their skill or their know-how or resources or whatever. And so one of the things we do as an extra incentive for people who are part of the Co-Creator Incubator is we make sure that we have their information and we understand what it is that they offer on a monetary basis, that they want to offer on a monetary basis, so that when paid leads or paid projects come through the system, that we are able to prioritize those, right? So there's a twofold benefit. Like, okay, cool. You've been a great, wonderful volunteer helping XYZ, but hey, this paid lead just came down. They need somebody who's an expert at XYZ. Would you like that? Yes or no? Yes, cool. Here it is. No, okay, cool. We'll go down the line, and we'll keep going down the line until we find somebody to cover that paid gig. And so, yes, I just entered recently today on the concierge page of the mixdeity.com, trying to explain the three main ways to enter the system. And one of them is through the co-creator incubator, which is just, hey, I'm here, I'm ready to show up, I'm ready to bring my ideas and collaborate. And that's one entry point. And we partner with you and we work with you and we partner you with people and work with them and we get the project brought to life come hell or high water. The second one is, hey, I'm about halfway to where I already need to be. I already did a lot of this stuff. I just need a little bit of help. I just need to get a bit of a boost. I don't have a huge budget, but I've got a little bit and I'm still in the middle of my game, right? I'm not a newbie, I'm not a brand new, but I'm also not at the hierarchy of full throttle A-lister. So that's like a middle ground. So we do a sponsorship and we just say, okay, that's cool. If you want to help bake a member incentive into your project that will help us generate new members and grow our community, then we will figure out a way to get you things at cost, get you things at wholesale, we can leverage our nonprofit status to get you tax incentives, whatever, and make it the most affordable way of getting things done. And we'll do that because you're helping us grow our community. And you maintain most of your autonomy. You do it the way you want to do it, how you want to do it, on your time schedule. It's your project. How, you know, you have a lot of that to handle however you want. We just consider ourselves an assistant of sorts. And in return for that, you're baking in a member incentive into your project. And then the third option is the just straight up buy it. I got money. We're a network of resources and tools and people and skills and talent and dancers and singers and producers and engineers and venues and studios and all kinds of stuff. And we all got bills and we are happy to get paid to use our skill set. And so if you are somebody who knows what you want to do and you just need to get it done, we can put a bundle together for you. You tell us what your budget is. We put it out to the network. We create a bundle. Okay, these are the people you need. This is how it's going to get done, blah, blah, blah. And there's the price tag. Let us know if you want to close on that or not. And again, it just doesn't matter if you're stacked with shit tons of money or if your broke was a joke or if you're somewhere in the middle, there's an entry point for you to succeed at Mixdeity. There is a way to get it done and we will get it done. If it is a project that has some level of human merit.
Yeah.
So that's what's up.